Good morning and welcome to this June 21st, 2017 edition of Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting to you live from the University of California campus in Irvine. We're streaming on the web at KUCI.org. We are always available via podcast. I'm your host for the hour, Marie Stone. Today we're doing something completely different and yet totally in the spirit of Writers on Writing. It is a show on writers, two wonderful writers in search of truth. And this time not by writing, but by actually physically searching for truth. The Outriders is a project developed by the Edinburgh International Book Festival. That's Edinburgh as in Scotland. They've sent five multi-talented and very different writers from Scotland on five extraordinary journeys across the Americas. Each one is joined by a fellow writer from the country that they're traveling through, and we have one of those pairs on our show today. These five outriders and their five traveling companions will appear at the Edinburgh International Book Festival in August in a series of discussions and a grand gala performance, which unveil and explore the new work that's produced by these writers and inspired by their experiences. So we have two of those people today. Jenny Fagan is an award-winning novelist and poet whose debut, the Panopticon, is being made into a film. Jenny says the changes in our political, social, and natural landscapes have never been more present or important. She will use this trip to connect with the vast array of people she'll meet on the road and to ask questions that underpin her work. What is truth? What are the truths of individuals, their inner lives and values, communities, traditions, peripheries? Why do people define their own truth and create lives of depth while being confined by a value-based system created around falsehoods of wealth and power and dominance? It is the job of artists to seek truth without flinching, but also to celebrate, protect, and honor those uncovered truths, and to use them to create literature, general debate, and conversation, and provide a connection for the communities and individuals they encounter. Jenny is accompanied by, maybe you've heard of her, she's one of my all-time favorites, Bonnie Jo Campbell. Bonnie Jo Campbell grew up on a small farm in Michigan with her mother and four siblings in a house her grandfather built in the shape of an H. She learned to castrate small pigs, milked Jersey cows, and when she was snowed in with chocolate, butter, and vanilla to create remarkable chocolate candy. She left home for the University of Chicago to study philosophy, and her mother rented out her room. She's since hitchhiked across the U.S. and Canada, scaled the Swiss Alps on her bicycle, and traveled with the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus selling snow cones. She is the president of Goulash Tours and organized tours across Russia and the Baltics through Romania and Bulgaria. Bonnie is just a fascinating, fascinating woman. She has written Women and Other Animals, Mothers Tell Your Daughters, American Salvage. She's been on the show a couple of times in the past with me for that. She wrote the novel Q Road. And for decades, she's put together this personal newsletter, The Letter Parade. She currently practices weapons training. She's just all over the place. She has her MA in mathematics and her MFA from Western Michigan University. She's fascinating. I'm so excited to have them on to talk about all of this. So without further ado, let's launch in. So glad to have you guys on. Welcome, Bonnie and Jenny. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
So I'm going to give you guys a chance. I've kind of described the Outriders project a little bit, but I want to give you a chance to kind of tell us about it and tell us how the project got off the ground and a little bit about how you got involved in it.
The Outriders project was the brainchild of somebody called Jenny Niven and Nick Barley from the Edinburgh International Book Festival. So they wanted to create a space where they could support writers to write and think in our current political times, and they've sent five Scottish writers across the Americas, and for part of the journeys we're paired with writers from whichever country we're travelling in, and they wanted to support writers to actually have time to think and write and respond.
So cool. Was this politically motivated?
It was definitely politically motivated, and they also want to invest in the importance of having writers who are willing to be politically engaged and who are willing to respond to what's going on, not just in their work, but in other ways. And it was really an opportunity for each of the writers to become, which sounds very hippie, but they really wanted to allow each of the writers who are taking part to have an experience where they could deepen their work, and that would change them personally, and that would carry on to the work that they do in the future.
So tell me a little bit about the other four trips. There's five pairs of you. And you're going all over the place. It's not just in the United States. You're going South America.
Yep, we've got South America. We've got Canada. We've got Northern Canada. We've got Mexico. We have Argentina. We have, where's the other one? Huh? In the US. Where I am, currently, clearly. In the south, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yes, we have spread out across the country, and we are, yeah.
So great. So tell me about the cities that you've gone to. You didn't design the places that you were going to go.
I kind of did, yeah. Okay. So I knew if I was coming back to this. I've not been in America for quite a while. Last time I traveled around with a friend who worked as a drag queen, and we did a big road trip, and it was interesting to come back quite a while later when I was published and my life's very different. But I knew I wanted to start in New York. I love New York. So that was the first point of call for me, and we wanted to do the Rust Belt to Silicon Valley. So we were plotting places along the way. So far I've done New York. I started in New York. I went to Woodstock. I then went from New York to Detroit. From Detroit, I went inland with Bonnie. We drove to Michigan, to Kalamazoo, and I met with Bonnie's family, which I loved. Mm. And then I took the train to Chicago, and I spent some time in Chicago. Loved Chicago. Really loved Detroit as well, actually. We were with visiting a writer called Alita Hernandez, who's fantastic, and her dog, who was very, very cool. And they drove us around and gave us a real feel of Detroit, old and new. So that was wonderful. Spent some time in Chicago, was on the radio there, did the architectural tour and hung out with Don DeGrazia, who's a brilliant Chicago native. And Bonnie arrived in Chicago as well. We flew out the next morning to Portland, and we left from Portlandia, hipster Portlandia, where we did a book reading. We left from hipster Portlandia and went to see Ken Babbs. Mm-hmm. So we were going back inland again, weren't we? Which area was that, Bonnie?
So that's the town of near Eugene, Oregon. So it's Dexter, and it's he's sort of famous for having traveled with Ken Kesey, and they were a group called the Merry Pranksters. But now he really lives kind of a authentic life in a little town in Oregon, Dexter, Oregon.
So cool.
He made me my first blueberry pancakes, didn't he?
Blueberry buttermilk pancakes.
Oh. And we were staying in this.
You hadn't had a blueberry pancake before?
No. Oh. I'm not a baker. I bake twice a year, Christmas and my son's birthday, and that's me done. And it's a Betty Crocker mix. Am I just bigging up Betty Crocker there? But for all you non-baking ladies, that's she's the one.
She's the one.
And we stayed in a great place there, didn't we? They had two yurts. There was a big yurt and a small yurt near our accommodation. And there was a great artist called Sahila living in the smaller yurt. And she had two rescue dogs. One was called Tito, and he'd been found wandering in Nashville. And one was called Jude, and she'd been found wandering in LA. And it was a logging road, and Bonnie would go out jogging in the morning. And I'd be a little bit concerned that these great big logging trucks were powering up the countryside. But that was wonderful. It was really, really nice. And then we drove to Crater Lake and the redwood trees.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's no way to get enough of Crater Lake and the redwood trees.
That's true.
Just can't. It's unbelievable. And because part of the project, that the project is to have the writers, the American and Scottish writers, or we say the New World and Scottish writers traveling together. And it's really great that we're visiting places that are marvelous and interesting to both sets. I mean, natural wonders are natural wonders, and they amaze us, and they put us in awe. And I think that's a good place for writers to be, to be standing in awe of great trees or of a beautiful natural lake that really inspires us to reach to the things that make us, I mean, that make us human and humble, and that make us realize how much we need to communicate. And as writers, we're communicators.
And when I knew I was coming to America, that I would do the America trip, I really wanted to make landscapes a big part of it. America is such a stunningly beautiful country. And you really get this odd feeling when you're visiting America of a country that's still very much becoming. It's very much inventing itself every single day. So actually spending time in that very ancient nature is really, really important. And it's massively enriched the experience. And we went from there to Crescent City. We were in Crescent City when we went to the Redwoods, weren't we? We went to see the extraordinary writer Dorothy Ellison.
Oh, yeah.
And she was wonderful. Yeah, that was kind of profoundly, life-altering experience. Mm. We hung out with Dorothy and her wonderful wife, Alex, and their very, very cool dog. Again, dogs have become a feature. I'm not a dog person. I'm a cat person. But this trip seems to be converting me to canines. It's very strange. I'll shake it off when I get home, I'm sure.
The trip is teaching you something, right?
Well, American dogs are special. They're an important part of life in America.
So, Bonnie, talk a little bit about how you got involved in the project, how you were chosen, and kind of what the draw was for you.
Well, it was such an honor that that the organizers even knew who I was as an American writer, and that Jenny chose for me to be her traveling companion. She and I had met last year at the Edinburgh Book Festival, and just briefly, and we had talked about how much we love fixing up houses, I guess, mm-hmm. and so we sort of bonded, and it seemed that we would make a good pair traveling, and it's really a brave thing, I guess, for both of us to do, and to travel together with a stranger, you know, and I think we learn things about ourselves, and we learn, you know, different things than we'd learn if we were in a comfy capsule traveling with, you know, close friends. It's a different space when it I think we notice different things. And part of the project for us is, you know, looking at the nature of truth. And so having ourselves in a sort of a vulnerable position, being together, looking at the world, looking out at the world and looking at ourselves, and we're learning maybe what's important in, you know, every day. I mean, writers do anyway, but it just puts us in a special position.
Yeah.
The book festival asked us to frame how we might want to creatively respond in the project. And because we live in a time where we're all being asked to be so complicit mm-hmm. in such very public untruths, I wanted to think about truth. So I've been writing a 3-week poem on truth whilst traveling. And the nature of the journey, because it's so fast and so intense, has been absolutely brilliant for just downloading this massive amount of information and really not filtering it, just putting it all down in this big piece. And then we've been doing lots of photographs, and we've been blogging and having different conversations with everybody we meet. And then Bonnie said, what about the space outside of truth? How do we broach the gap between what we're currently going through? And how did you say it?
Yeah, I guess I come from Michigan, which is a state that has a lot of different political views. There's we voted Republican this year for the first time ever. And so for some of us who really had not expected that, it's caused us to look around anew and try to see what we're missing, what all of us are missing about each other. And so I'm very interested in having conversations with people who think differently and who feel maybe disenfranchised in a different way. We talk about people being disenfranchised, people who are minorities. We talk about immigrants. We talk about different kinds of different groups, but all of a sudden now we have a new group who feels disenfranchised. So I want to explore how we can have conversations that can bring us all back together. It sounds corny, but we do want to be a world in which people from different backgrounds can talk to each other and can find common ground, because mostly we have common ground. But here we are so divided in America. And in talking to Jenny, I've learned the ways in which this this division, which is so profound in America, is really everywhere now, or at least everywhere in Europe now.
And we're really seeing two ideologies going to war. And I think it's actually necessary. I think conversation is necessary. I've never had so many political conversations in my lifetime as I've had in the last 2 years. And I think that's hugely important and inspirational and positive. And I think that Bonnie's idea of how do we bridge the gap between these two ideologies? How do we create a space whereby one ideology isn't just judging the other is a very interesting one, and quite an uncomfortable one for a lot of people as well. So it's interesting that that idea has come out in the last couple of weeks, and it's kind of extending out where we've started. And definitely across Europe and across the world, we see people who are very frightened. And when people are frightened, they tend to become more conservative. And this is going on everywhere. We had there was an election in France very recently, and Le Pen was one of the front runners, and she's very far right. And it was very concerning that France, which we consider in Europe to be one of the most cultured and ideologically sound countries, and they've been doing this forever. They've been through World War One, they've been through World War Two, they've always been a huge port for immigration of people trying to get into Britain, which is still a massive ongoing issue. And they voted for Macron, which really reassured us. So we have another vote when we go back to the UK and Britain. There will be a big vote on the 8th of June. And again, things are very divided. And we have a very similar experience in the UK, as in the media is owned by five very wealthy men who are friends with very wealthy men who run the countries. And so the accuracy of press coverage and the use of essentially propaganda has definitely been a part of the media campaign to fuel and exacerbate feelings within communities. And that's a very interesting thing, to talk about a free press, to talk about journalists who are not being allowed into meetings with the government, who are not being allowed to accurately record things. And I suppose as writers, as fiction writers, we're very lucky that we do have a space where we can tell the truth at the moment in certain countries. And I didn't think I'd have to think about that in the way I am at this age and in a Western country. But this is something we have to have conversations about.
Right. My guests this morning are Bonnie Jo Campbell and Jenny Fagan, and they are the Outriders. They are, Jenny is here from Edinburgh, and they're both going to head back in August. Is that when you do your presentation back to the group?
Yeah, we're going to meet at the Edinburgh Book Festival, and it's one of the world's great literary festivals, and it goes on for an entire month in the center of Edinburgh. It occurs concurrently with other art festivals, and we're going to get together, all 10 of us, and talk about what we learned and how it went. And Jenny has some great ideas for projects that can continue right up to the festival. We'll be Jenny will be going home soon. I guess we'll both be going home soon after 3 weeks of intense travel and covering a lot of territory, physically and psychologically, or geographically and psychologically. And then we'll meet again in, I think, our event's about August 12th or something like that. So all your friends who want to come to the Edinburgh Book Festival, it's really a place to go. And we're looking forward to having a big conversation there.
That's incredible.
It's the Outriders event's going to be one of the main thing, really, for the Edinburgh International Book Festival this year. And it's quite unusual to be able to get 10 writers together in a space where we can all bring back what we've done creatively, what's happened politically, the relationships that we've created throughout, all the people we've met. So we'll do the big event, and then we'll do events together as well, smaller events together, to give readers the chance to come and ask more questions and find out more about it. And we're going to, I've been making a little documentary film on the road.
Mm.
So hopefully we'll have that together and this truth poem. And we're going to do some postcards. We've both been taking loads of photographs. So it would be nice to be able to give people a flavour of that feel of being in such constant, intense motion. It's such a unique experience. It's not something I'm likely to do again very, you know, in a hurry. I've got a little boy and it's really... And actually... I really had to justify the time away. And if it hadn't been for the current political situation, if it hadn't been for the fact that this kind of experience does massively alter you creatively and otherwise, I wouldn't have justified the time. But I feel like as a writer a few years ago, I could put all my political beliefs and all those things into my work. And more recently, I felt like if I'm being silent, I'm being complicit and I can no longer just respond through my work. So it's altered the way I communicate and it's altering the conversations I have. And actually, I think that's allowing me to probably be a better artist.
So great. Actually, you had mentioned that you're doing this truth poem on the road. And I wondered if you could read. Do you have that here? I would love for our audience to be able to listen to just a...
I will try a tiny bit of this. So I'm doing the very modern thing of reading off my phone. So this is a 3-week poem, and most of the lines begin with "the truth is." And when you're telling... We're looking at the truth of nations, and we're looking at the truth of individuals, and we're encompassing both at the same time. And that's been a very profoundly intense emotional and intellectual experience. So this is just a tiny snippet of a 3-week poem. So we did the train. We did the wonderful Amtrak train yesterday from San Francisco to LA. And I did a 10-hour version of this yesterday. So they're all being laced together. But I'll do a tiny bit just now. The truth is, love me. The truth is, building number 4. The truth is, New York's finest needs all of New York's finest. The truth is, road narrows. The truth is, a steeple. The truth is, in the animal kingdom. The truth is, Dollar Tree. The truth is, Marshall's Fish Point Factory. The truth is, Smokey. The truth is, conch shell umbrellas. The truth is, I can't spell umbrella. The truth is, Brooklyn, Queens. The truth is, chaos leads our orders. The truth is, baby grew a backspine. The truth is thermal imaging. It's an old lady being x-rayed with her hands above her head. It's you need to step in line, miss. I'll go to the next bit. You can lace it together. The truth is skull and crossbones. The truth is a filter. The truth is $2.50. The truth is cloudy. The truth is through traffic, keep right. The truth is my taxi driver can't understand me. It's not his fault. I'm complicated. The truth is Delancey Street. The truth is the church bus. It's Joe's fabric and pigeons flying. The truth is entry is forbidden. The truth is the Amtrak guard from Kalamazoo to Chicago is someone to dream of later. The truth is red movers and van lines. The truth is DTX. The truth is DDTX. The truth is DDTX76529. I'll give you another tiny bit. Most of these are in. This is yesterday. The truth is tooth and claw. It's a ticking clock. It's Lost Man Creek. The truth is a fertile wound. It cauterizes so we can heal again. The truth is loco. It came from Monterey. The truth is chunged. It's a petroleum pipeline. The truth is bereft. The truth is crude oil. The truth is tomorrow. And the truth is today. So that's a tiny bit.
So good.
Of thing that it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And some of the ones in New York were much more angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've changed with the landscapes along the way.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
They were much more frenetic in New York. There was a lot more swearing in New York. we've covered so much ground in so many different ways that each part of the poem has altered with it. But it's been a great form by which to filter all these different things.
How long will it be ultimately?
It'll be a book. It'll be a very short kind of poetry book. Not that short actually. It's big. And some of it directly looks at gender, directly looks at sex, directly looks at class, directly looks at the divide between the elite and everyone else. Some of it's very directly political, some of it's very directly personal. So it's been a lovely space. And I said to Bonnie, I said, if the words are good, I'm always good. So whatever else is happening, if I can make sure this little core in the middle of my life is the words. And that's it's been a luxury to be able to have a space to do that. You know, when I'm at home, I'm doing a million different jobs and I don't get the opportunity to do a 3-week poem. So I'm very grateful to have had the time to do it.
So great. That was Jenny Fagan. One of our outriders, Bonnie Jo Campbell, is our other outrider. And you're listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I forget to do that now and then. So let's get into some of the conversations that you've had. I'm particularly interested in Detroit and where that city is now, because it feels so iconic in my mind of how we've kind of ended up where we've ended up politically. And some of the people that you've encountered and the conversations that you both have had. Have any of these conversations changed your mind about anything? Have they challenged opinions that you'd had?
Well, it was really great that during our short visit to Detroit, we did have this guide, Lolita Hernandez, and she has really lived in Detroit for decades. She's not someone, an artist come lately to get a cheap house, which is a phenomenon that is happening now. And maybe her vision of it, she was a former labor organizer, so she was in the auto plants and she saw them go down. And she has a real love for that landscape that maybe is a little difficult for some of us to look at, a landscape that has a city landscape that has fallen into decay. Lolita sees the beauty everywhere, and she took us to beautiful places. She told us, I'm not going to show you ruin porn. Mm-hmm. Some of us know that phrase. I'm not going to show you the terrible decay unless it's important to me as a Detroiter. And so she showed us the Heidelberg Project, which mm-hmm. is one man's vision of how to make sense of a crazy world that is, you know, not supporting its people. And in Detroit, there's so much beauty. Everywhere you go, there's murals. Everywhere you go, there's people reaching out to create art on walls, on buildings. There's music everywhere. Just walking through the streets, we heard music. We ran into people at the Eastern Market, which is a very lively farmers market that's been going on all this time that you know, nobody mentions when they talk about what happens in Detroit, but everyone's there at the Eastern Market. And we ran into people, and they obviously love their city and want to figure out ways to make it a better place to live. But we see that the big projects that are sometimes posed, like the big transportation projects, often are not really created by the people of Detroit. And Lolita pointed out to us that, you know, a light rail system might not work for people who have to get to a small downtown light rail system, which sounds glamorous to us, may not meet the needs of the people in the city.
Mm-hmm. And one thing, I love Detroit. I really liked it. And people would chat to you in the street. In Scotland, we have that. You know, you can walk up to somewhere in the markets. A lady started chatting to me and she was really nice. And, that, you know, they have community and they have spirit and they're very switched on. And I loved that. And we walked into this great wall of sound, this great massive wall of Motown Detroit sound on the street, and that was an astounding moment. It was one of my favorite moments on the trip. And I think it's difficult to think, whenever I'm in an area where you know there's a lot of poverty, where you know that children and mothers and fathers are being left without the resources they need, it's always a difficult thing to think about. And I come from a very poor background, a very rough background. I grew up in the care system in the UK, so I understand what it's like for generations of people to be generationally poor or generationally neglected. And having just come from New York, en route there, you know, I had driven past, for example, the Trump building where Melania is living with her son. And the energy in the streets is very frenetic when you drive past that building. Even at night, I drove past it maybe 1 a.m. and the traffic all narrows and there's lots of armed guards and it's a very strange, dark kind of energy. And you come out of New York and you go over to Detroit and it's very green. It's very fertile. Mm. When you fly in on the plane, you're like, this place has so much to offer. And Lolita said that as well. She said, you know, this place is rich. It's rich in resources. It's rich in personality and character and history. And it's very interesting just to see that resources and investment would be pulled from an area like that, so close to New York for such a long time. I think it's astounding. And I worried about the kids there who are having to deal with this. And I admired the slow roll where 12,000 people went out recently on bicycles of every age and color and political belief. And they all went out, 12,000 of them on the street cycling. And I thought, that's rock and roll, you know.
Was that in Detroit?
Yeah.
That's so great. I hadn't heard about that. That's great. It was interesting. I was talking with Anna Quinlan, actually, last week. We were talking about the teenagehood of the United States and how the U.S. is sort of the world's teenager with all of the beauties and problems of being a teenager. You know, you're excited. You think these new ideas are going to work. You have a lot of hubris. You don't listen to anyone else. You have no historical perspective on life. And I thought that was an interesting observation, and I wondered, coming from Scotland, which is much older than the U.S., your observations in that vein.
Yeah. I mean, I really get a sense all over, everywhere I've traveled in America, of a country that's still becoming, a country that's defining itself every day, really. Even in the architecture, Bonnie and I have discussed that there's so many buildings here that they're made of wood, or they're perhaps the roof's built to last 30 years or 40 years. The idea of permanence in some way seems absent. And I think that's very fascinating. I think that I've automatically been brought up with an idea of permanence, even though I'm 39, I've lived in 46 places, I've moved endlessly. There's something about the roots of history that are there. So I think it's both terrifying and has a huge amount of potential. And America's so influential. It's always been so influential. When I was a kid, we looked to American films, we looked to American music. Loads of my favorite writers are American writers. And the thing that's lovely traveling in this way is I've just met so many lovely people, so many lovely, interesting, warm, welcoming, open people. But there is an underlying base level of madness. And that's something to talk about. It's something to think, you know, what is that? Where does that come from? And I'm Scottish, you know, we have an underlying base level of madness as well. Sometimes it's not so underlying. But that's part of the identity of America. And I think that slight trigger happy instinct, that slight trigger happy instinct to react rather than to think, has been present everywhere I've went in America. And I think that's something that's in the national identity. And I've enjoyed it. I've thought about Celine's Journey to the End of Night a lot whilst I've been here. So Celine wrote this amazing book, and he travels across a vast part of America in it. And there's something about this idea of an epic. America is an epic that's at the start of a journey, and it's already been a very brutal, very interesting, huge journey. And it's all been built in ideology. Mm-hmm. Everywhere we go, everything's built in ideology. And the thing about ideology is it's based on ideas. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we need to check those ideas and think, were we heading in the right direction? What does those ideas bring to us and our children? So everywhere I go, the thing I keep coming back to is ideology. And America is such a young country, is such a kind of ballsy present. You know, it's not a wilting wallflower. It's not willing to sit in the corner and be ignored. That ideology, I think, is quite fascinating.
Yeah.
And the artists and the writers and the people I meet all have different ideas and opinions on it. And I think the thing about America is it's so big. It's so vast that it's I think it is hard for individuals here to get a grasp on that and to, you know, root their source of identity to where they're from or root their source of identity to their families, because there's this great bigger swirling beast that's very intangible at times.
It's really like five countries at least, right?
Yeah.
And we're coming to know that now. It's at least two countries right now. Bonnie, I'm curious about seeing America, if you see the U.S. kind of through different eyes now that you're traveling with Jenny as a That's what I think is great about being a parent, is that you get to see the world through, I'm not infantilizing you, Jenny, but I'm saying we do see, it does force you when you're traveling with somebody or when you're living with somebody or when you're partnered with somebody to look at the world through their eyes for a little while. And I'm wondering what that experience is like for you to maybe look at the U.S. in a different perspective when you're traveling with somebody from outside the U.S.
Yeah, it's been really fun. I mean, in the lighter sense, it's been really fun to see just simply architectural imagery or just to look at houses. There was a moment when we were in Oregon when Jenny said, "Stop the car." We had a driver and we were traveling by car, and Jenny said, "Stop the car," and she got out and took a picture of a clump of mailboxes on the road. And to me, it was a very ordinary vision of kind of a chaotic collection of different mailboxes that everyone had put up from their own house and attached together in kind of a crazy way. But it's such a common vision to me that this would be the portal between the outside world and all these people, is this crazy collection of mailboxes. And Jenny just said that would not be in Scotland. We would not have that. We would have either the mail would be taken to your house, or there'd be maybe a more formal collection where the boxes would be the same.
And I love the design aesthetic. So there's a lot of, you know, like your big trucks. I adore the big trucks in America. They look mean. They look like they mean it. You know, they look like they're not messing around. I love that. I love the design features of the water. What are they called? Water.
The faucets
faucets and the hydrants in the street, you know, they're solid, they're chunky, they're a very different design. And I love the design of the mailboxes as well. So there's lots of different things design wise that I see that when Bonnie's over in Scotland, she'll pick out things that it will be the same thing. But I adore them. And signs, America do the best signs. I have literally taken hundreds of pictures of signs, you know, and they're funny. And the humor as well. The humor has been brilliant. Even on the train yesterday, they were really, the girls who were on the tannoy, they were very funny. And the same in Chicago, there was this very deadpan kind of droll humor. So those design features that has been great to be able to say to Bonnie, oh, I find that fascinating. Or listening to Bonnie and Ken talk about horses. You know, they're both very knowledgeable about the land and about horses and about how to care for livestock and how to care for the land around you. And that was really fascinating for me to hear. It's a very kind of confident language. It was a very confident transaction of a kind of given knowledge, which for me as an outsider, I don't have. So those things which Bonnie might not have noticed or other people don't notice on the way, for me are very interesting. They're very rich. And I said to Bonnie, you know, even sitting in a laundrette in New York is interesting to me. Everything is, you know, it's just that bit to the left different that you find inspiration in it.
That newness, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's all happening so fast, our journey. But it gives us fodder for ways of thinking about how cultures are different. How is a culture different where anyone can build a house that is only going to last, I mean, 40 years, hell, 20 years. People build houses that will just not last. And that we build whatever kind of mailboxes we want. I mean, what does that say about us as people, that in a certain sense, Americans avoid, say, central planning? When someone tries to, say, create a vision for a community, there are exceptions. Maybe very wealthy communities can plan a living style in a community. But it's often, if someone tries to do it for a city, it is, people are suspicious of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks to us socialist in the way that it's threatening to our individuality. And so it really does create these small things add up or give evidence of really big differences in ideology.
And I've explained to a few people on, again, getting back to architecture, and I think it's a good framework for us. And I think it's really interesting. Another thing that's been very interesting is we're both very working class female literary writers who've met there's been times where there's been three generations of working class female very literary writers, and that doesn't happen very often. And I think at home, you know, I like a house when it's 250 years old. I prefer a building when it's, you know, at least 250 years old. And there's something about the identity and the history of that building. And I'm actually writing a book just now that's set over 110 years in an old tenement in Edinburgh. And I think the architecture is a really great metaphor for that idea of permanence or lack of permanence in the US. And we've been seeing this week that Trump's making certain decisions on climate change, for example. This idea of the world as somewhere that we inhabit and then perhaps it just disappears when we are not here is a very, very, very dangerous idea. I really see life on Earth for humans as something that we are privileged to go through, that we're caretakers of the planet whilst we're here. We are not permanent. There is no such thing as permanence. Impermanence is what human experience is, and what we leave behind is vastly important. It's hugely important, and really one of our main jobs whilst we're here is to think about the legacy we leave behind. So I guess the idea of legacy is something that's come up a lot, and I think it's you know, as a parent it's important, but I think for anybody, of course, it's absolutely important.
Mm-hmm. As you've traveled across the U.S., can you, I know it's still early in the processing of all the information that you must have accumulated over the last 10 or 15 days. But are you able to see trends in thinking, and would you relate it to class or geography or just who individuals are? Can you kind of make trend predictions here?
I think there's a kind of spirited lawlessness in lots of areas of America. You know, I've met women who've raised five children on their own at a time where women weren't meant to raise five children on their own. I've met people who've taken a little piece of land and built a family identity around it. And perhaps they've not entirely got permission for all of the things that they should have, because, you know, America was built on this idea of cowboys and Indians, of becoming, of being new, of, you know, there's been lots of times where I was on Ellis Island, and Ellis Island's extraordinary. You know, I was able to see 12 million immigrants came through Ellis Island, and it has this very rich history. And they described the relationship between New York and New Jersey, and that New York and New Jersey argued about who Ellis Island belonged to and who would make money from Ellis Island. And when that went to court, I think there was something very unfair went on, and New York made sure that they got what they needed to get. And that story has been repeated across the country. I have heard it in Chicago. I have heard it in Michigan. I have heard it in different places. This idea of fight it out, and the person who's able to kind of fight harder and fight heavier is the person who will take the cut of the money or take the cut of things. And that is, you know, that is life everywhere. But I think it's interesting in a really different way up here. It's very upfront, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a very upfront thing, and it's actually kind of respected in a way, you know, that you can go out and you can make something out of nothing, make something out of the land. So there is very much a change in identity all the way across. And that gives you the idea of, you know, I love the idea of America as one country that mm-hmm. has very different identities within it. And each of those identities doesn't need to necessarily get along with each other or like each other. I like that. I think, you know, friction brings for fertile conversation. It brings for change. So yes, there really is. And I've not been anywhere that I've not loved in one way or another. But I'm a writer. I travel with a very open heart and a very open mind. And for me, I'm always looking for people. You know, I'm always looking to meet people and chat to people and see what they're doing, whether it's somebody in a cafe or wherever it is. And I think it's, and also the difference of having guns. You know, at home we don't generally have guns. This idea that if somebody breaks into your house, you could just, you know, shoot them, is, again, to me, feels kind of lawless. It feels kind of like taking autonomy to a whole new level. But it creates a different energy amongst people in their homes and on the streets. And I think that's been really interesting to see as well.
Absolutely. My guests this morning are Jenny Fagan, Scottish writer Jenny Fagan, and I've been a huge longtime fan of Bonnie Jo Campbell. So this is a huge pleasure. Biggest surprises on the trip? Things that you did not see coming, either one of you?
I can't think. I've traveled in all kinds of different places. I guess the thing I couldn't see coming is that I like dogs. It sounds ridiculous. It's not I dislike dog. I'm not a dog hater. I guess I didn't quite see that. And no, I don't know. I don't know if there's been any one thing in particular.
I imagine it's going to be a lot of processing after the fact. I mean, you know, when you're in an experience, it's really, for me at least, it's really, it's hard to think about it when you're in it and you have to kind of...
One thing is I've had a discussion with quite a lot of different writers about class whilst I've been here. You know, at home you can say the C word and people get nervous. It's something that's not discussed. We like to think that class, like racism, went away, but it didn't. And we're quite clearly seeing that at the moment. And I think one thing that's been interesting for me is the much more upfront approach in some ways to writers I've met who are talking about class here, are talking about having a very checkered background. I have a very checkered background, and I've chatted with some writers I've met and they've been like, no, this is great, you really need to talk about this more. Mm-hmm. But at home and in Europe, I'm very private about my upbringing to a certain level. So actually I think that's probably one of the things that will change me. I think it's something to really think about. And William Burroughs talks about every individual at some point taking charge of their space, time, location. And I think this trip for me was a space where I really wanted to do that. So I think that's perhaps going to be one of the most interesting changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think issues of class in America, we are talking about them with people. And I think this might be an area where we talk about things differently. There's something about Americans, let's say Americans who are in a lower class, meaning what means usually for us is just they don't have money right now. And I think traditionally class was something a little more deep-seated. But I'm surprised how much Americans, in a strange way, are very accepting. Oh, I'm poor. Here, I'm just poor, but I might be rich next week, even though we kind of know that's probably not going to happen. But we have this in our imaginations in America, we can live in that class with the idea, oh, I'll win the lottery next week, and then I'll be a rich person. And I think it's a little naive, but maybe it makes people more comfortable talking about these issues because they don't see them as, and if they were looking with a more historical perspective, it would be a little bit, that aspect would be a little bit scarier. And I think I was really grateful to Jenny when she talked about the ways in which she saw people she talked to were afraid. I think that's something that's kind of different about our time, that some people are afraid of what's going to happen next.
I think a lot of people are. And I've met with, you know, especially amongst the LGBT community, people of color, we're all being hit in a different way. If you're part of the periphery, if you're an obvious part of a supposed periphery, an idea of a periphery, then you feel vulnerable in a very different way. And just yesterday on the Amtrak train, I saw all this amazing scenery and just extraordinary views outside the window. And then we went across a bridge and there was a young black boy sitting on a bridge getting ready to jump, and there were two policemen trying to talk him down. And the first thing I thought, obviously seeing all the media in America, was I hope they're nice policemen. I hope they are going to be able to reach out to that boy and make him feel safe enough to climb back down. And he must have been about 15 years old. And then I've met artists and I've met different people I met this great artist in Harlem, Carl, and he's in his 60s, and he said, you know, it's the first time in decades he's had to say, as a businessman, as an intellectual, as a thinker, as an artist, as someone who's traveled all over the world, that he feels afraid. What is going on politically at the moment is dangerous. It's really, really, really dangerous. And it's very easy to underestimate how quickly ideology can massively alter life permanently for people. And we have fought for hundreds of years for the changes that we have in society. And those can be eradicated by removing human rights bills, by changing legislation in a couple of years. And we are seeing that happen right now. And the people who are most aware of that, they know what that means. And so we all have to have these conversations very publicly and keep having them. When they had the Women's March in New York, we had one in Edinburgh, there was a Women's March in London, there were Women's Marches in Europe. And I do sometimes feel like, in a way, as women, that have to change things at this point. They need to ask men to stand alongside them, and they need to ask men to do that. But there's something about the difference in energy and the difference in the way that women think that allows us a space to be able to go out and do that without it being a compromise of macho intent or a compromise of ability to earn. And if we don't do it, we can be in a situation that's going to be really, really, really dire. Yeah. Right across the globe. And I think this is underplayed by the media all the time, but real individuals are feeling it, and they know, you know, lots of these things are in living memory.
Yeah.
In this 110-year book I'm doing at the moment, the last person tried under the UK witchcraft laws, for example, was under Winston Churchill. Mm. And she died, and they didn't remove the UK witchcraft laws. It's very recent history. They only changed the right to be able to rape your wife in marriage in the 1990s. Legislation is hugely important. Changing legislation and changing what's acceptable, changing what's acceptable to think about other people, is a very, very dangerous thing.
Mm. Ooh, all the more important for your trip. We only have about two minutes left, but I want to give both of you a chance to talk about. I know you're keeping blogs about this. I know you both have film projects, and I want to make sure that we get that on the record here. Bonnie, can you talk a little bit about your quickly about your film, and then about the blog that you're keeping for this project?
Yeah, it's the new way of writing these blogs is perfect for this trip. And I'll just say that I am keeping a blog with a lot of photos and some observations, and it's called Guerrilla Girl Adventures in Writing. And I've really enjoyed riffing off things that Jenny is exploring, and then exploring things that surprise me. So those will be up there for now, and I'll probably keep adding to it, so it'll be there.
And we can stalk you on Facebook, which I do.
Yeah,
we can stalk your website. Yes, it's a great website.
Your film?
Yeah, and the filming on my book, Once Upon a River, will finally begin in September. For my filmmaker who's been seeking tax credits, speaking of public policy. So she's finally gotten them. So we're really looking forward to getting started on that.
Congratulations.
I'm really excited to see the film. And one of the reasons, the reason I wanted to travel with Bonnie Jo is we met last year at the Edinburgh Book Festival, and I love her work. And I think we have things in common. There's counterpoints in common. We're very different writers, but there's also very specific things in common. So it's been really wonderful to do that, and to meet Dorothy and to meet Lolita. You know, that's a really great thing for me. What was the question again?
Your blog and your film.
Blog and film.
My
blog is called The Dead Queen of Bohemia. And it's I've got all my truth poems on there. Mm. And lots of photographs and responding when we can, because we're emotional a lot, responding with more detailed thoughts on what's going on and what we're seeing. And today, actually, I have the footage of the first completed film I've done as a writer director has just arrived, and we're going to watch it in LA. We're going to have the tiniest premiere in the world in LA, whilst they're putting it on at a huge festival at home at Hull City of Culture. It'll be on there in a couple of days. So that's been a really interesting project to finish, and it's a short film. I was born in a Victorian psychiatric institute in a village of Victorian Psychiatric Institute. So there was 30 wards, there was a shop, there was a village hall, there was a church. It's on 222 acres, and it's very archetype, the absolute archetype of what you would think of, a kind of Victorian psychiatric asylum. But this place was an entire village, and they found 566 unmarked graves. More recently, they found that there was 566 unmarked graves, and then a further, I think, 287 in the locality. And it's been derelict for about 12 years, and it has such atmosphere and such history that I really wanted to capture it before it disappeared. And it comes back to actually what Lolita was saying of this idea of being voyeuristic over groups or situations that you don't understand. So people go around this site, and I mean, they have this kind of creepy theme park feel to it, which I get, and I don't disrespect it, but in the same light as an artist, I think it's our job to humanize the actual real people. That was somebody's brother, that was somebody's mother, that was somebody's friend. And that no person should be buried without a name, essentially. So, and then I saw one whilst I've been traveling. There's one in, I think it was Mississippi. There's a campus in Mississippi, a university campus that was built on the site of an old institution, and they think there's up to 7,000 unmarked graves on that site. So it's very interesting. Everywhere I go, I want to go to the institutions. I wanted to go to Ellis Island. It's the first place I wanted to go. I just missed Alcatraz. I really wanted to go and visit. I don't feel right when I visit somewhere until I visited the oldest place in town, and usually that's the institution or the prison of one kind or another. So we're going to enjoy that premiere this evening, and then the feature film for my debut novel is hopefully being filmed this winter. So
fantastic.
I went out for a day's filming with an actress who's 24 years younger than me, who looked very like me 24 years ago, and that was a very disconcerting experience for many, many reasons. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how Bonnie finds the... We can compare notes on the filming process and how we find that experience as it goes along as well. So I'm looking forward to being able to share that.
I love it. I hate that we're out of time. I have so much more to talk about, but I hate that we're out of time. Bonnie Jo Campbell and Jenny Fagan, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
That was Bonnie Jo Campbell, Jenny Fagan, talking about their Outrider tour. They will be in Edinburgh at the Book Festival in August. You can check out their blogs, follow their adventures, and hear more about that. I assume more will be made of that in August, so you can check them out then. That's all the time we have for today. I'll be right back here with you next Wednesday morning for more inspirational chats with authors. Until next time, thanks so much for joining me. Have a great, great day, and stay tuned for Kaleidoscope Days with Kyle coming up next on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Have a great day.